Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
We're sorry to inform you your request for a second loan has been refused. And the board of directors up in the city has instructed us to take the farm from you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks here as we continue to chronicle the crisis of our republic on this July 11, 2005 edition of the broadcast. We're glad to have you joining us tonight as we're going to be covering some of the G8 information from last week and a whole lot of other things as well. And you're welcome to call in if you want tonight, 559-781-3773, 559-781-3773. As we are expanding the broadcast, and the information for that is on AmericanExpose.com. American spelled with a K, not a C. We're forging new partnerships, and so we're very pleased to have more people on board as we continue to expand and at the same time continue to maintain our present relationships with these broadcasting outlets. And we appreciate Nicholas, and we urge you to support him at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. He has the information to do that, the address, and ladies and gentlemen, the network does need your support if we're going to continue on the air. He carries this broadcast free of charge because he believes in the information, and we certainly encourage you to support that if you appreciate what we do here, because it's very important. These things do not operate without money. Unfortunately, money, as phony as money really is today, we don't have real money, but at the same time, you still have to have it in order to be able to operate, and that's the problem that we face. Ladies and gentlemen, today we find out, as I have before me a piece dated July 12th, which I don't know how that's possible, because today is the 11th. I don't know if this is intended for tomorrow or not, but the headline is, terrorist gang used military explosives. And we're talking about the London situation. As we told you on Friday's broadcast that that Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, was warned in advance before the terrorist activities that took place over there. Apparently he had time to change his plans, but yet he didn't have time to get the warning out to anybody who was in London. And then we find out that there was an intelligence operation or something going on as part of a training situation in London the same day. The shades of this thing sound very, very suspiciously close to what was going on September 11, 2001 in New York City. As do I believe this is an orchestrated crisis? Well, of course I do. And anybody who's done any research about the Hegelian dialectic and about the terrorist attacks of 2001, and I put terrorist attacks in quotations, would come to the same conclusion. If you're a new listener, we urge you to stay tuned, because you are in for a ride, an awakening, and once you learn this stuff, you can never go back. But your eyes will be forever opened. Once you understand the Hegelian dialectic, you understand how to listen to the news. You understand how to watch the news. And you'll never watch it the same way again, because you'll always be able to be in a situation where you can catch the lies as they're telling you them. And it's really remarkable. You can hardly stand, I can hardly stand to watch the news anymore, because it starts to make me physically ill after a while. I can think of specifically around the Terry Schiavo situation, the constant bombardment of lies. And today it's global warming. That's the big one that they're pushing, and of course that was on the agenda at the G8 summit in Scotland, that turned out to be overshadowed by this so-called terrorist attack. Now, we're going to be talking a little bit about the protesters, because I didn't talk about this on Friday's broadcast, and I intended to. These protesters, the media was reporting that these people were out protesting and putting the pressure on the G8 leaders to eliminate poverty in Africa and to eliminate poverty worldwide. And, of course, this goes right into the United Nations agenda, because, as we've often said, Chapter 3 of Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century, the United Nations agenda, Chapter 3 of that 40-chapter document is called Combating Poverty. And they go into quite some length, several pages long, about how that they intend to eliminate poverty in all of the developing countries, what they call the developing countries. And they're not developing. The only reason they would be developing is because we developed countries are supposed to fund the building of their infrastructure and the feeding of their people. And in the meantime, these countries all have governments that are corrupt, that are wasting money. And we mentioned last week about Nigeria wasting something like $40 billion or something. The total they've wasted, the amount that one country of Nigeria has wasted, the amount of money equivalent of the entire aid that the West has sent to the continent of Africa. That one country has wasted that much money. And yet, the United Nations, the G8 summit people, have agreed to boost the aid. Let's see, I'm looking for the document here. It says from the BBC, G8 leaders agree $50 billion aid boost. The G8 summit has ended with an agreement to boost aid for developing countries by $50 billion. The debt of the 18 poorest nations in Africa is also being canceled. On trade, there was a commitment to work towards cutting subsidies and tariffs. On climate change, Prime Minister Tony Blair said an agreement had always been unlikely, but that the U.S. now accepted global warming as an issue. And of course, this is just more of the Hegelian dialectic, trying to teach you, trying to make you convinced and confuse you into thinking that there's really any opposition whatsoever. George W. Bush isn't against this agenda. George W. Bush is a socialist just like his dad was. He's a New World Order globalist, and if you listen to anybody else who tells you anything other than that, they are working for the other side. I don't care who it is, they are working for the other side. And maybe they don't even know that they're working for the other side, but that's the reality of it. They say reaction was mixed, with some calling it vastly disappointing. Kumai Naidu, chair of the Global Call for Action Against Poverty, said, quote, "The people have roared, but the G8 has whispered," unquote. And what roaring people do we have? Are we talking about the protesters here? Are we talking about the rent-a-mob that protested outside of the G8? Folks, this rent-a-mob situation, these people are a bunch, this is a whole industry that they have going on. Indonesia has an industry that is rent-a-mob, and it's documented in the Taipei Times. Dated January 16, 2004, they say, Indonesia's rent-a-mob industry gears up for election. It says, in a slum just a stone's throw from the gaudy mansions of Indonesia's elite, Rizal trades in human flesh and misery. Angry students, the urban poor, the rural poor, supporters, opposers, all can be arranged for a price. Quote, over the years, I've had orders for people from the parties of two presidents, but I'll work for anyone, unquote, said the 30-year-old Jakarta man, one of thousands of Indonesians who make a living arranging mobs. In the world's fourth most populous country, politics had traditionally been about crowds, huge, noisy, and often violent masses. However, Rizals is an industry which has blossomed since mobs took the streets in 1998, ousting former autocratic President Suharto and giving birth to a shaky democracy. Under Suharto, of course, demonstrations were not allowed. You'd be arrested and put in jail, said Dewey Fortuna Anwar, a political analyst and former presidential advisor, because political rallies and political campaigns in Indonesia are still mass-based rather than rooted in issue. Some parties need to reassure themselves and their competitors that they have followers, so they rent mobs, she said. It's become a business. Not all crowds are rented, but it shows political shallowness and economic need, she said. The point of the matter is, and this is in Indonesia, but if they have this in Indonesia, they have this in the United States, they have this in Scotland, they have this in various places around the world. There are companies that people can go to rent a crowd of people for the purpose of protesting and sending a message that the public is on the side of a certain agenda. We had people last week, according to the media, that were campaigning for the elimination of poverty, which just happens to be a promotion of the United Nations agenda. And, gee, what a coincidence. They were meeting to talk about decreasing Africa's poverty, a fulfillment of Chapter 3 of Agenda 21. So I say to you, were these people on the dole, on the payroll of the leaders of the G8 and the shadow government, which controls it all? I would suggest to you that's all it is. And according to Joan Vion, she said, she was on another broadcast, and she made the statement that she's dealt with these people. And she's dealt with them enough to know that they are indeed bought and paid for. They have no real convictions about what they believe. They're just there to collect the check and to make the noise that they're supposed to make. But $50 billion to aid developing countries, even as the United States, we people, are struggling to get to work every day, paying the high gas prices and to pay our bills. And I want to know when the average American is going to get upset and begin to make their voice be heard. We have the Central American Free Trade Agreement in the House of Representatives, soon to be voted on. It was my understanding that July 11th, which is today, is supposed to be the day that Congress comes back. It's very important that you make your voice be heard about the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which would devastate what's left of the United States economy. And you talk about immigration, migration from Mexico, look for migration from the Central American countries as well, if and when CAFTA is passed. So, ladies and gentlemen, and now is the time, and I realize that many of you, as I've expressed myself in the past, that it seems like a waste of time to call Congress because they have their agenda in place and they're, in many respects, bought and paid for themselves. But if we sound the voice loud enough, the bottom line is we have to try. We have a God-given responsibility to future generations to make our efforts, to put our efforts toward preserving what we have. We're not called to be successful. We're called to be faithful. Faithful to the cause. That means learning all that we can, spreading this information to the extent that we can, and doing what we can, and that includes calling Congress. 1-202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. After the broadcast tonight, I will be putting a link up, if I can find it. I think I can. I have it right here. There is a link that I have that if you don't know who your representatives are, you're able to you'll be able to follow this link and find out who they are. I want you folks to please do this. And don't be afraid to call during the time that they're open, but also after hours. Leave messages. Call 2 and 3 times a day if necessary, because there's going to be enough people who are not paying attention, who are not going to do what they're supposed to do. So those of us who are remaining have to kind of double up and do what we can to make sure that they get enough calls that at least they're going to know what the real opinion of the public is, how Americans, because we need to take a stand for this. Moving along here, I'm going to skip that one. I received an email about the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, and this is regarding the G8. It says, this is dated July 8th, the commitment of the leaders of the G8 to act now on climate change and to vigorously address the climate-energy-sustainable development interface will inspire current and future intergovernmental action, says Joke Waller Hunter, Executive Secretary of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. She expects the outcome of the G8 in Glen Eagles to provide a major impetus to talks at the next United Nations Climate Change Conference later this year. So they're holding another one this year. Quote, in highlighting the central role of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, including as the forum for negotiations on future action, the G8 leaders have put the spotlight on the next UN Climate Change Conference later this year in Montreal. As a near-universal agreement that establishes the long-term objective for action on climate change, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change provides the forum for intergovernmental cooperation on this global problem. And listeners, is it really a global problem, I ask, as we always have to ask? The reality is, climate modification, climate manipulation is going on today. We've documented that repeatedly on this broadcast. It is documented also at weather.sweetliberty.org, which you can get to from the front page of AmericanExpose.com, American spelled with a K, not a C. The weather modification section, as owning the weather in 2025, is there from the Air Force. The science to make a tsunami bomb is also there. They were working on that in the mid-1900s, about 1944. And by the way, regarding the tsunami, I heard on National Public Radio last week that the people there in the tsunami region are not being allowed to locate their houses near the water. They have a buffer zone, and that's the word that they used, buffer zone. So now we have the United Nations buffer zones for wildlife being put in place in the tsunami region. Continuing here, it says Ms. Waller Hunter is also very pleased with the support expressed by the G8 for the Clean Development Mechanism, or CDM. This unique mechanism assists developing countries in achieving sustainable development and at the same time assisting industrialized countries to achieve their targets under the Kyoto Protocol in a cost-effective manner. She said, quote, it is crucial that the CDM delivers on its potential and the support of the G8 is of great assistance, unquote. In November, parties to the convention and to its Kyoto Protocol will get together to discuss a number of issues related to the implementation of their climate change agreements. It is also likely that they will start addressing what needs to be done over the longer term after the 2012 end of the first commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol. The longer-term perspective provided by the G8 presents an important backdrop to that discussion. The first meeting of the parties to the Kyoto Protocol will take place from 28 November to the 9th of December 2005. So that's the next Kyoto Protocol meeting, I guess. November 28th through December 9th of 2005 in Montreal, Canada, in conjunction with the 11th session of the Conference of the Parties to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. So the plan moves forward, ladies and gentlemen, unhindered because people are not aware that this thing is going on. People are not aware of what sustainable development is. The vast majority of people have never even heard the term sustainable development. And that's the challenge that you and I face, waking up those populations of people so that we can increase our number and have some effect. Meanwhile, the effort to silence us goes forward. From CNN, CNN.com, Canada signs protocol to fight cyber hate. It says Canada became the first non-European country Friday, and this is dated July 8th, to sign up to combat quote-unquote cyber hate, the online dissemination of xenophobic propaganda. What is xenophobia? Well, fear of something foreign? Fear of foreigners? Could that be a lot like what we're talking about? We talk about migration from Mexico. We talk about being overtaken by the United Nations. That's certainly a foreign situation. We talk about the possibility of a war with China. We have Costco ports all over the country every day. There's Chinese ships calling on one of America's ports. We don't know what's aboard those things. And yet, it goes on with the constant flood of migrants coming in from Mexico. How do we know that these people, how do we know? We're being invaded. And that's the bottom line. But xenophobic propaganda, combating this hateful speech, this is an effort to silence you and I, ladies and gentlemen. It's an effort to silence the alternative media, which relies upon the internet in order to be able to do what we do. Once they have BPL, broadband through the power lines, in place, you might not be able to use your shortwave radios anymore, so the internet will be all that we have. And make no mistake about it, the broadband through the power lines, BPL, is moving forward as the FCC has already given it its blessing and allocated certain frequencies for it. Now, they say here in the CNN piece, and by the way, you're welcome to call in, 559-781-3773. 559-781-3773 is the number to call. They say Canada signed an additional protocol to the International Cybercrime Convention drafted in 2001 by the Council of Europe, signed by several dozen countries, including Canada, the United States, South Africa, and Japan. The convention names four types of cybercrime: confidentiality offenses, notably breaking into computers, fraud and forgery, content violations such as child pornography and racism, and copyright offenses. The treaty aims to speed up international cooperation in investigations and extraditions. The additional protocol widens the scope of the convention to combat xenophobic propaganda and calls on countries to criminalize its distribution via computer, as well as internet sites that deny or approve of genocide and crimes against humanity. And, of course, that certainly does not apply to us because we are not in favor of violence against people in any regard. There are some out there who are. But at this point in time, we're not going to get anywhere through violence. We really have enough violence in the world right now, which is perpetrated by the real terrorists, those at the top of the ruling class. But they continue, they say, the Cybercrime Convention constitutes a basis for Canada's law criminalizing racist hatred on the Internet. And Canada's Justice Minister, Erwin Kotler, after signing the additional protocol, said, quote, "No one country alone can combat racist hate, particularly cyber hate. This is an anonymous, borderless, faceless crime." And isn't that convenient? The Internet is borderless, so it's going to take an international governing body to deal with it, isn't it? He says, "We've gone from 5 hate sites on the Internet in 1995 to 5,000 in 2005. And again, what constitutes a hate site? If you ask too many questions about Zionism, are you a hate site? Well, to some you are. SweetLiberty.org is being blocked by certain governments because of they say they're a hate. It's a hate site. And yet Sweet Liberty doesn't promote violence against anyone. He says these are horrific sites. They're used for purposes of recruitment. They particularly target the young. It is predatory hate of the worst kind," he says, unquote. Kotler said the international treaties facilitating extradition and prosecution of perpetrators of hate crimes on the Internet are particularly important in the light of Thursday's deadly attacks on public transportation in London, which, of course, we've told you was orchestrated just like 9/11 was. But he said, quote, "We believe the incitement to hatred is the most proximate cause of terrorism itself. Therefore, if you're combating incitement to hatred, you're combating terrorism." And what have we told you in the past, ladies and gentlemen? Who is a terrorist? Anyone to them, anyone who disagrees with them, anyone who doesn't go along with the flow is a terrorist, or will be in the future labeled a terrorist and dealt with accordingly. That's why every single one of us need to be concerned about what's going on in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Because someday you might find yourself being branded a terrorist and being sent down the river to Guantanamo Bay. Meanwhile, as they put forth this effort to control the Internet, we see from CNET News, and we got to take a break here. Maybe I'll share this on the other side of the break. If you'd like to call in, 559-781-3773, 559-781-3773, you're more than welcome to do so. Otherwise, I've got material that I can share here, but I thought maybe some of you folks might like to participate tonight. And I don't give out the phone number enough, I realize. 559-781-3773. Maybe I'll start this piece here and we'll continue it on the other side. But they say, will the UN run the Internet? It says an international political spat is brewing over whether the United Nations will seize control of the heart of the Internet. UN bureaucrats and telecommunications ministers from many less developed nations, yes, those impoverished so-called developing countries, they claim that the U.S. government has undue influence over how things are run online. And now they want to be the ones to be in charge. And so they're clamoring for the United Nations to come to their rescue and to seize control of the Internet from the United States, which began it under the military project DARPA years ago. We got to take a break here, ladies and gentlemen. We'll continue this article on the other side. AmericanExpose.com, spelled with a K. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.
This is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry. Are you a believer that is looking for a way to understand Bible prophecy as it pertains to historic as well as current events? Do you believe a one-world government is predicted in the Bible to occur in our day? Do you want to know what the Bible says about the Vatican's role in all of this? Are you one that believes no prophecy of the Bible is of any personal interpretation, as 2 Peter 1:20 declares? And are you also one that understands all the symbols in prophecy are defined accurately in all the books of the Bible? If so, then you are one that would be blessed by the truth provided broadcast. Please join us on Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time for an adventure in Bible prophecy. See the prophecies of old come to light in today's current events as well as historic events in our not-so-distant past. You will find information in this broadcast that will benefit you and your family like never before. So please stop by Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on FirstAmendmentRadio.com for the Truth Provided broadcast. For more information, stop by our website at www.remnantofgod.org.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25. Or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
American Exposé. I'm Darren Weeks, your host, and as we continue on with this second and final half hour, I'm not sure Nicholas is at the board, but if you'd like to call in, 559-781-3773, 559-781-3773. Dennis has posted a lot of good information on AmericanExposé.com. I noticed he has a lot of information on Zimbabwe. And we appreciate his research. And anybody who wants to join in and do research, if you send us some good stuff, and look, folks, I'll be happy to extend accounts to anyone else who wants to post good information for us to share on the air. This is a team effort, and we're always welcoming new members of the team to climb on board and do what they can to uncover things for the country. And certainly that's something that you might want to keep in mind. As you do your research, forward your stuff by email to us, and if we like what we see, maybe we'll add you to set up an account for you also. But he has information here about the United Nations, shocker, drug crime, web running wild in South Africa. It says the Western Cape is increasingly being used as a conduit for certain illicit drugs destined for markets around the world, according to a United Nations report. Africa in particular, South Africa, and Cape Town have become a halfway house and dumping ground for illicit drug traffickers of mountains of drugs like tick, heroin, cocaine, millions of firearms used in violent crimes, and of course, to the United Nations, any firearm is something that shouldn't be. And we're going to get to some information about that here in just a moment. And they say they're also trafficking in human beings. The report lifts the lid on an international crime web which is spinning nearly out of control and threatens development on the continent and President Thabo Mbeki's African Renaissance. It also highlights the tick epidemic sweeping across Cape Town and reveals shocking figures backing its argument that, quote, the region is increasingly being used as a conduit for illicit drugs destined for international markets. And the point here being this drug trafficking trade that's going on and this trafficking of human beings, throwing money at the problem is not going to clean up the problem. It's not going to deal. What you have today, ladies and gentlemen, is you have in Africa corrupt governments. That's the reason why Africa has poverty, is because of corrupt governments. If government gets out of the way and basically leaves the private sector alone, if there can be a private sector, you will have a thriving economy because people will engage in trade. People will do what they have to do to survive. Markets can be created, but with totalitarian governments in place, with corruption going on in place, to the extent that we have in Africa, that is why that continent is in poverty today. And throwing money, engaging in socialist activities, the socialist redistribution of wealth, taking money from us and giving it to them, is not going to solve Africa's problem. But what it is going to solve is it's going to create a problem for us. You folks are having your labor taken away from you. We don't have any real money. The money that we have today is slave credits. And it has been since 1913, December of 1913, when the Federal Reserve Act was put into place. We have funny money. And consequently, spending that funny money is the equivalent of taking away your labor, stealing from you your labor. Because that's the only real thing there is. You work to earn that funny money, and then they turn around and take it from you. They're stealing, indirectly, they're stealing your labor. Moving along here, they talk about Mugabe's revenge. A man who quit his government faces losing his farm. And I'm going to get back to the United Nations Internet thing in just a moment. But I want to cover some of this information that Dennis posted for you, for your perusal, on AmericanExpose.com. And these articles are from AfricanCrisis.org. It says the farms were Mugabe's rewards to his political friends and allies. And this person named Jan says, I am glad to see that this particular man is taking a stand. It says a top ZANU PF official who has quit Zimbabwe's ruling party to protest against demolitions that have left hundreds of thousands homeless has begun experiencing the bitter taste of President Robert Mugabe's revenge tactics. Fearsome Mabalakwa, difficult name to pronounce. He served as a senior director of the dreaded Central Intelligence Organization before he left the organization to assume a senior position in the ruling party. He handed his resignation to party chairman John Nkoma last Friday, but only yesterday, officials from the Ministry of Lands raided a farm Mabalakwa had been allocated in Zimbabwe's central city of Gweru under a controversial land reform program and seized a tractor and an assortment of heavy agricultural machinery he had been given by the government for use on his farm. It is understood that Mabalakwa will soon be served with a notice to vacate the farm completely. A government official who requested not to be named said a dispatch to act on Mabalukwa had come from Mugabe's aides attending a meeting with a Zimbabwean leader in Libya. The aides only issue instructions approved by their leaders. Mabalukwa confirmed the seizure of the equipment he had been allocated yesterday, but said he stood by his decision to quit the ruling party despite the retribution. He said, quote, they are now on a mission to punish and destroy me, unquote. He repeated his stance that the slums and informal settlements being destroyed were a direct product of the Mugabe government's policies. See, they're bulldozing people's houses over there. They're bulldozing these people's houses, and for what reason? To relocate populations of people? To implement the United Nations agenda of putting these people into sustainable communities? Here we see destroy your home or the bulldozers will. This is also from AfricanCrisis.org. It says the Zimbabwean government has continued its program of demolishing illegal homes despite urgent calls by aid workers to halt the operation. In Epworth, an old settlement of around 300,000 people, 15 kilometers east of the capital, Harare, residents began destroying their own homes on Tuesday rather than pay a fee of $150 per room if the job was done by government bulldozers. So here these people are faced with being charged by their own government for destroying their own home. So, I mean, if they don't destroy their own home, the government will charge them by the room to destroy their home for them. Now, how would you folks like to be in a situation like that, where you had to destroy your home and make yourself homeless? And this is going on in the middle of winter. It's just amazing. And this, folks, these are the type of governments that the United Nations is giving $50 billion of your dollars to fund. Now, do you think a government that would order its people or even charge its people money to destroy their homes, do you think that's the type of government that's going to take that money and use it wisely? With no transport available to the designated transit camp of New Caledonia, 20 kilometers east of Harare, or back to the rural areas, the displaced people were left to fend for themselves out in the open in the cold of midwinter. An NGO official who asked not to be named said, quote, the situation is bad and we don't know what to do. The people are desperate. There has been no assistance since the operation started. People need transport to their rural areas, food to eat, and tents. Now it's very cold at night, unquote. The initial clearance operation in Epworth began on the 20th of June with a demolition of newer sections of the settlement, leaving around 12,000 people homeless. On Monday, the police moved into the center of Epworth and began marking structures deemed illegal, although one aid worker alleged that this was done at the desertion of individual officers rather than city council housing plans. The target was extensions to legal homes, cottages built by property owners for renting out to tenants, the main market, and individual kiosks. I'm not going to finish this in the interest of time. I'll just read this one last paragraph here. It says, the government has argued that its cleanup program, which has displaced 370,000 people, is part of an urban renewal strategy. And certainly, ladies and gentlemen, we have those urban renewal strategies going on all across the United States of America as well, as the UN agenda is being put into place and the Supreme Court opened the door wide back in June that people's individual property can be taken for the purpose of development. So we have going on there the same thing that we're apparently going to be having going on here. The difference is we have the Fifth Amendment, so supposedly they're supposed to be able to pay you money for your land. Although I'm not sure if Jesse Hardy ever got paid. His money was tied up in court, and they were charging fees against him that he didn't know what these fees were supposed to be. And I'm still not sure what the status of that case is. It says, for the moment, let's see. Well, I think I'll just leave that one there. And if you'd like to read the whole thing, you can go to the website and do it, AmericanExpose.com, and it should be right around at the top. I think it's the latest entry that Dennis put in there. Very important stuff to realize the kind of corruption that we're dealing with today, and yet we're rewarding that corruption through the United Nations system and worldwide socialism, and communism is alive and well. Back to the Internet. Will the UN run the Internet? From CNET News, it says an international political spat is brewing over whether the United Nations will seize control of the heart of the Internet. UN bureaucrats and telecommunications ministers from many less developed nations claim the U.S. government has undue influence over how things are run online. Now they want to be the ones in charge. While the formal proposal from the UN Working Group will be released July 18th, it's already clear what it will contain. A preliminary summary of governmental views claims there's a convergence of views supporting a new organization to oversee crucial Internet functions, most likely under the aegis of the United Nations or the International Telecommunications Union. At issue is who decides key questions like adding new top-level domains, assigning chunks of numeric Internet addresses, and operating the root servers that keep the net humming. Others suggested responsibilities for this new organization include Internet surveillance. You better believe it does. Quote, consumer protection, unquote. And perhaps even the power to tax domain names to pay for universal access. Now, the global tax, ladies and gentlemen, is one thing that was addressed, according to Joan Vion, at this last G8 summit. And I meant to get more information about that, but I ran out of time before the broadcast, so maybe we'll cover that on Friday. But the global tax is something that's very close to being a reality, a UN tax. And they're talking about taxing airline tickets, I understand, as well as other things. Here they're talking about taxing the Internet. This development represents a grave political challenge to the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, called ICANN, which was birthed by the U.S. government to handle some of those topics. A recent closed-door meeting in Geneva, convened by the United Nations Working Group on Internet Governance, offers clues about the plot to dethrone ICANN. As these excerpts from the transcripts show, dissatisfaction and general purpose griping is rampant. And they have quotes from various places, various countries. Syria, quote, there's more and more spam every day. Who are the victims? Developing and least developed countries, too. There is no serious intention to stop this spam by those who are the transporters of the spam because they benefit. The only solution is for us to buy equipment from the countries which send this spam in order to deal with spam. However, this, we believe, is not acceptable, unquote. That was Syria's complaint. Brazil, responding to ICANN's approval of XXX, the .XXX top-level domain, which is supposed to be used for pornography, quote, for those that believe that are still wondering what XXX means, let's be specific, Mr. Chairman. They're talking about pornography. These are things that go very deep in our values, in the values of many of our countries. In my country, Brazil, we are very worried about this type of decision-making process where they simply decide upon creating such new top-level generic domain names, unquote. China complained, quote, we feel that the public policy issue of internet should be solved jointly by the sovereign states. What a joke. Sovereign states. By the sovereign states in the UN framework, they say. For instance, spam, network security, and cyberspace, we should look for an appropriate specialized agency of the United Nations as a competent body. Unquote. Ghana. They say, quote, there was unanimity, pardon me, folks, for the need for an additional body. This would therefore address all issues relating to the Internet within the confines of the available expertise, which would be anchored at the UN. Unquote. Those proclamations serve to flush out the Bush administration, which recently announced that it will not hand over control of Internet domain names and addresses to anyone else. And I would suggest to you once again, ladies and gentlemen, that this is more of the Hegelian dialectic at work. Here's George W. Bush, this man, this heroic man, who's supposed to be a big-time anti-New World Order guy, an anti-UN guy, who acted alone in going into Iraq against the UN's wishes. And what do we have today but the UN implementation going on in Iraq? Because of what George W. Bush did in taking us into Iraq in the first place. And they admit the intelligence was faulty. Well, not faulty, it was made up. There were no weapons of mass destruction, but the point is, this is the Hegelian dialectic which confuses the population into thinking that there's really a contest of ideas going on, when in reality, the agenda is harmonious between all of these people who are in power. We have no friends in Washington. I'm going to leave that there. In the waning moments of the broadcast, I began talking about global arms control on a previous broadcast and how it deals, how it ties to communitarianism. The communitarian agenda is something that we have going on today. This is the reason, I believe, for the Supreme Court decision, toward the end of June. Because communitarianism, cities have to be revitalized, have to be changed, sustainable housing has to be built and put into place in order for the communitarian agenda to be a reality. And what is communitarianism but community communism? So Amitai Etzioni and Stephen Helland writes in the Communitarian Network, on November 18, 1991, the Responsive Communitarian Platform was released. It spells out an encompassing agenda and contains the following statements about domestic disarmament: that there is little sense in gun registration. What we need to significantly enhance public safety is domestic disarmament of the kind that exists in practically all democracies. The National Rifle Association suggestion that criminals, not guns, kill people ignores the fact that thousands are killed each year, many of them children, from accidental discharge of guns, and that more people, whether criminal, insane, or temporarily carried away by impulse, kill and are much more likely to do so when armed than when disarmed. And the point here, ladies and gentlemen, as we've stated before, they always talk about how many guns that are accidentally discharged or that criminals that use to kill people. They never talk about every single day the countless cases that you never even hear about, that never even reported in the paper, where people take out their gun and don't even have to fire them, because the criminals will run away as soon as they see your gun. None of those situations would be a reality if we were disarmed. I shouldn't say none of them, because there will always be some who defy the law and do the right thing and carry anyway. But the point is, a great number of people will be victimized when law-abiding citizens are disarmed. The Second Amendment, they continue, behind which the NRA hides, is subject to a variety of interpretations, but the Supreme Court has repeatedly ruled, they say, for over 100 years, that it does not prevent laws that bar guns. Well, The Supreme Court may say that, but the Second Amendment clearly says the rights of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And I would ask the Supreme Court, what part of shall not do you not understand? They continue. We join with those who read the Second Amendment the way it was written, as a communitarian clause calling for community militias, not individual gunslingers. The listing below includes all those who signed, omitting those few who took exception to the preceding clause. And they have a big long list of signatures here. They continue under the heading of communitarian perspective. Of all the issues that plague our communities, none is more severe than pervasive violence. The most elementary duty of a community is to provide a safe, civil order to its members. The fact that in all too many of our communities, children have to sleep on the floors of their homes to dodge drug dealers' bullets, that many of our city's ordinary citizens cannot walk their streets, not to mention parks, with impunity, that we lose more lives to mayhem than any other established democracy. And ladies and gentlemen, we don't have a democracy. We have a representative republic, or at least we used to. Under the Constitution, that's what it's meant to be. But they say these are all deeply troubling signs of our violence-ridden society. The senseless, brutal killing of innocent people is a tragedy that can be stopped, and the danger that our cities can be turned into Beirut must be averted. True violence has many sources, however, none can be as effective and rapidly removed as the technology of violence. Given the proper political support by the people who oppose the pro-gun lobby, legislation to remove the guns from private hands acts like the legislation drafted by Senator John Chaffee can be passed in short order. There are no particular technical difficulties to implement the gun legislation. No need to develop new vaccines, space stations, or even to fashion yet one more bureaucracy. Moreover, the benefits would be very quickly and dramatically visible, adding support to the disarmament measures. Make no mistake about it, folks, they're coming for your guns. Eventually, they will come for your guns. And all of these criminals, anybody who shoots anybody else, anybody who would ever hold up a bank, is going to run right in and turn in their guns as soon as they pass these laws, right? The record of those areas that implemented even a limited set of gun controls shows that the value of these measures, for example, a District of Columbia law that banned the purchase, sale, transfer, or possession of handguns by civilians, coincided with an abrupt decline in homicides and suicides by firearms. Oh, really? Well, I wonder who puts out these statistics, because according to the statistics I've seen, in the UK and Australia, for instance, violent crime rose dramatically when guns were taken away. It just goes to show you that figures lie and liars figure. We got to go, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for being with us. I'll be back Friday. Chris will be back tomorrow. Join us then. God bless, and have a good night, folks. Make your phone call to Congress. 202-224-3121. God bless. Good night.
America is at war right now. It's not a war against Iraq, nor is it a war against terrorism. It's a new war for our independence. At stake is our Constitution and the very freedoms we enjoy every day. You see, power-hungry politicians are quietly advancing something deceptively named the Free Trade